Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everybody. Happy Thursday to you. Before we get started with the show, we want to take a short moment of silence for the late Dustin Keller. I'd like everybody to bow their heads. It's just jokes, people. As you all probably saw, you know, Dustin Keller kind of got bodied by Ray Lewis on Monday night. He was cremated on Tuesday, but we just paid our respects to the brother, so everything is everything. So happy Thursday to all you sports heads out there. We'd like to once again welcome you into the War Room. I'm your host, Devin McMillan, and I'm here with Jimmy, Akil. Brad's going to join us a little later on. PJ's going to join us at about 6:20. We had a lot of fun with you guys last week, but we're going to try to make this week even better. We have a great show for you tonight. We'll discuss the results of a drama-filled week one of the NFL season and look ahead to week two. We'll take a look at the Team USA and their gold medal winning performance in the FIBA World Championships. We'll also recap rivalry week. I tongue twisted on that one. And talk some college football with our guest, college sports contributor, Victor Vic Nice Montgomery. We'll get into what seems to be a sensitive topic of female reporters in locker rooms, and of course, we'll discuss as many of the biggest stories in the week of sports that we can squeeze into this short 2 hours. All right, we'll try to get to our sound-off segment this week. That's the segment towards the end of the show where we open up the phone lines and let you guys call in with any topic you want to talk about. The conversation got so hot last week that we never got to it, but we will try to leave some time for it tonight. So before we get into tonight's rundown, you brothers got anything you want to say to our listeners?
No, I mean, let's go.
All right.
Let's fire it up.
All right, so let's get started and get into these birthdays. The first birthday that we have for you today is the great Elgin Baylor, Hall of Fame Laker. He turned 76 years old today. What y'all think about when y'all hear the name Elgin Baylor?
Well, for me, I'll let Jimmy go next, since I know he's a Laker fan. But when I think of Elgin Baylor, I think of the NBA draft lottery every year where he's sitting there. It's almost like he has an assigned seat each year as he was the general manager for the Clippers. Now, he was also a great player, don't get me wrong, but the only thing I think of is him sitting at the table during the playoffs, draft lottery, picking again for the L.A. Clippers.
Now, what about you, Jim?
Well, I want to say a couple things. First off, he's a Laker, so, you know, but I got to keep it real. I think of a couple things. For one, I think of that horrible haircut he has. I mean, dude, that's like the worst haircut ever. That's one thing I think of. Another thing I think of is the fact that he worked for the Clippers for 22 years. Then he left and sued them, saying they discriminated against him because of his race. If that's the case, why were you working there for 22 years before you decided you were being discriminated against? I mean, what's up with that?
He needed some more dough before he left. So,
so that's all I got on Elgin Baylor.
When I think of Elgin, I just think of scoring. Every time somebody does something, you know, breaks a scoring record, his name is always up on the list somewhere. But we're going to move into the next one. The next one is somebody a little younger, Dan Dickow. He's 32 years old today. Jimmy, what you think of when you think of Dan Dickow?
I think of Spike Lee embarrassing himself on TV, talking about how he loves Dick Paul, when the Knicks signed Dan Dickow. Than that,
he was actually paused by the reporter when he did that. It was hilarious.
Yeah, that's the highlight of Dan Dickow's career. Like, you know, so that's terrible to say, but it's the truth.
Yeah. Kill?
When I think of Dan Dickow, I just think of his time at Gonzaga, and after that being a, I guess you can say, somewhat struggling NBA point guard. He was always the 12th, 13th, 14th, or 15th man. And I believe, if I'm not mistaken, he actually decided to play, get German citizenship or Dutch citizenship, whatever his home country is in terms of his ancestors, so he could play for their national team. So that's what I think of when I think of Dan Dickow.
Yeah, when I think of him, I don't think of nothing. Next person. Bernard Bernie Parmalee, 43 years old today, running back from the Miami Dolphins. I remember this dude from, like, the early 90s. I don't know why, probably because I used to collect a lot of football cards.
My birthday, yay!
Kill. Well, what you know about Bernie Parmalee?
What I think about Bernie Parmalee is I just clumped him in the pile with all the average to below average running backs that played with Dan Marino. So when I think of him, I also think of Troy Stafford. I think of Terry Kirby. I kind of lumped them all in together to average to below average running backs that didn't help Dan Marino get a championship.
All the Marino bums.
Exactly.
Jimmy.
Well, for me, Akil, like, stole my thunder. I think of the same exact thing. I think of all the horrible running backs that played with the Dolphins, and he named pretty much most of them. But I think of the same thing. That's the first thing that comes to mind when you hear, you know, Bernie Parmalee. And also,
just a Parmalee,
but go ahead, that's the end.
All right, next one is Robin Yount. He turns 55 today. That's the Hall of Fame shortstop / center fielder from the Milwaukee Bucks. He's actually in the 99 Hall of Fame class.
My birthday, yay!
Jimmy, Robin Yount.
Oh, go ahead.
Oh, whoever.
Yeah. Well, the Milwaukee Brewers, I know somebody's going to call in and say, he said Bucks, but Brewers. But what I think about when I think of Robin Yount, he was a good player, but I also think, this guy played center field and shortstop. Who else does that? Who plays those two positions? Like, you know, that's you know.
I said Bucks.
Yeah, you said
Milwaukee Bucks.
Well, guess what? They both teams stink anyway, so it doesn't matter. And, you know, because you think of the Milwaukee Brewers, they might as well not even play. They have no chance of winning. But that's either here nor there. But Akil, what do you think?
I think the fact that, you know, Devin said Bucks just shows you how insignificant the Brewers are. I mean, that's what I was going to say for the Brewers, and nobody knew about them. Like, when do you ever remember watching the Milwaukee Brewers on TV? And it's kind of sad that a talented player like that just kind of, you know, nobody really seen him play. Do you all remember any Robin Yount highlights? You know, I like to see his highlight tape on YouTube, so that's what I think of when I think of Robin Yount.
Absolutely
right.
Not.
And last one up, another Baseball Hall of Famer, Oral Hershiser turns 52 today. Oral Hershiser.
My birthday, yay!
Jimmy.
Okay, when I think of Oral Hershiser, I remember him, like, he was a great pitcher. When I was coming up, I mean, he was a huge baseball fan as a kid, and I collected baseball cards, and he was actually one of my favorite players. He was a great pitcher. But when I think of him, I think of the Little League World Series because, you know, since that time, he's like the face of the whole Little League World Series. And, you know, dude, like, goes in on little kids and, you know, but so he's tough. He was tough on his teammates when he played, but he's, like, tough on little kids. Paul.
Cool. Kev.
I think of the Dodgers winning the World Series that year over the Oakland A's and Kirk Gibson's home run. That's what I think of when I think of Oral Hershiser. And he was, you know, he didn't have, what's the word I'm looking for, he wasn't a dominating pitcher in terms of, like, let's say, a Halliday or a Nolan Ryan with his heat, but he was definitely a smart pitcher that got the job done.
My great
guy. And his name, Oral. What's an Oral? All right. That's our birthdays for the day. So, Jimmy, you want to take us into?
Sure. What we're going to do now is we're going to have what we call While Y'all Were On the Grind, which is a weekly segment. We talk about pretty much what's going on in sports while you guys were at work today. And you guys can call in and weigh on some of these topics if you want to. And also I'm going to get my co-host's opinion on a lot of these topics. So right now we're going to do, While You're On the Grind. All right. All right, here's the first thing I want to talk about. And some of you may care, may not care. I don't know how many tennis fans we have out there. But Rafael Nadal, now this guy is dominating. He's clinched the year-end number one ranking for the second time in 3 years. Like, he leads the rankings. He has 12,025 points, which is almost 5,000 more than the second ranked Novak, you say his last name, Djokovic, who has 7,155 points. Listen, Federer is third with 6,735. Nadal has won 9 major titles in his career and is one of 7 men to complete a career Grand Slam, which he just completed Monday by winning the U.S. Open. He leads the ATP Tour with 6 titles this year, and since April, he's won 43 of 46 matches. Now, I'm going to be perfectly honest. I'm not a huge tennis fan, but when I was reading these stories and seeing how he dominates, you know, I couldn't help but be impressed. So let me see. Dev, what do you think about that?
He's a monster. I mean, remember last year the whole thing was whether he had finally overtaken Quentin Tarantino, I mean, Roger Federer, for the number one spot. It's a no-brainer now. I mean, he got it. And he just, like you said, he finally got his career Grand Slam. He did that on Monday when he won the U.S. Open. So congratulations to Nadal.
Now, Kel, what you think about Nadal?
Not being the biggest tennis aficionado, all I know is I always hear his name. You know, I hear that he's winning. I heard that he won the last event, and, you know, that's all I really have to say. All I can say on tennis is Andre Agassi was my favorite tennis player. That's about it.
Plus, he had the best sneaks, too.
Oh, did he ever?
Yeah, tell me the Agassi wasn't hot. Anyway, next let's talk about good old Clinton Portis. You know, Clinton Portis. Everybody knows that Clinton Portis is known for, you know, putting his foot in his mouth, so to speak. He wasn't taking any questions. What'd you call him?
Clinton Portis.
He wasn't taking any questions earlier there on his comments. He was speaking in regards to Inez Zines, who's the reporter who everybody knows of at this point from being in a Jets locker room and saying she was being harassed. Well, Clinton Portis made some comments about that, which, you know, really weren't too great comments. And he's a watch what he says. But I'm on the matter, he had fun with Haynesworth, right? Everybody knows who Albert Haynesworth is at this point. And it's funny because Albert Haynesworth was a great player, but at this point, he's, like, known in everybody's household just for being an idiot. You know, anyway, he had fun with it as Haynesworth played straight man. Haynesworth didn't want to say anything. He greeted reporters with a piece of black athletic tape over his mouth. And come on, man, black athletic tape over your mouth. So basically, he's staying mum now. After he said everything he said, you know, now he just wants to be quiet or whatever. He's basically, you know, like you said before, Clinton Portis. What do you guys have to say about Clinton Portis?
I heard about this, you know, being down here in the D.C. area. They were saying something like every time they asked him a question, you know, he didn't, since he had the tape on his mouth, he kind of just held up a notebook and gave different responses from the notebook. One said something like, no comment. Then they asked him something else that said, thanks for coming. And then the last one said something like, God bless you, have a good day. And every time he did that, his man, Albert Haynesworth.
I'd sell my soul for a donut.
Well, he was, he was putting the black tape over his mouth after every response. I think it was corny. Just like, you know, his whole act.
Here's my thing with this whole thing with Portis opening his mouth and Haynesworth, like, you know, becoming famous for being a dog. It's like, you hear about the Redskins every day in the news and it has nothing to do with football. It's nothing to do with football. What's going on? I mean, the thing is, Shanahan was supposed to get control over this team, and what happened with that?
Well, they won the Super Bowl last week. That's what I hear on the radio every day.
Kel, what you got to say about this whole Redskins thing?
Well, being a Cowboys fan and having to deal with that up and down emotion of jumping in the air, yeah, we won. And then saying, oh, well, you know what, we didn't win. It was a penalty, game over. And living in the D.C. area for, you know, at least a decade, I'm used to Clinton Portis kind of saying things and then having to recant his statements, say, oh, well, you know what, I apologize. I shouldn't have said that. That wasn't the real Clinton Portis. So being down here in Texas, it's kind of like, oh, you know, well, that's what Clinton Portis does. And with Haynesworth, man, you know, the Redskins, they normally win the Super Bowl in March around the time of free agency by signing all these big players, and a lot of people thought that with Dan Snyder giving Haynesworth a $100 million contract, they'd win a Super Bowl last year, but they won four games. And this year, you know, he didn't even want to practice because they were playing a 3-4 defense. I'm like, come on, man. They're paying me $100 million, and I'm upset because they're changing it to a 3-4. Hey, if I'm him, I'll play cornerback for $100 million.
Yeah, I play water boy. B. Austin, what you think?
What's going on, War Room World? I mean, Clinton Portis has always been known as a coon. You know, some of his antics I find to be mildly funny. You know, I've laughed at the dude. He does have some entertainment value. Overall, I don't dig the dude, but he's definitely a heck of a player, a heck of a talent. Haynesworth, he's a joke. He's a joke. As Akil said, you pay $100 million, I'm fixing the field, I'm bringing water, I'm giving towel massages, calls, you know, whatever is necessary at $100 million, I'm doing it.
Right.
Yeah.
So,
well,
you know, that's
kind of
my
thing. Yeah, I think there's some more news. Let's speak more about the controversy. You know, we'll talk about this later on in the show, but also the NFL sent a memo this morning to all 32 teams regarding the issue of female reporters in the locker room. The memo reminded all the teams of an equal access and conduct policy towards the media as an apparent response to the incident involving, you know, Ms. Zane's reporter, you know, from Mexico's TV. Azteca. Like, seriously, is that a serious station?
I don't know. The way she dresses, I mean, I'm kind of questioning, you know, how serious that station is, but we will get into that later on in the show. I'm not even going
to
go there right now. Right now, all I need to say is,
honk it.
Yeah, I just wanted to bring up that the NFL sent the memo to all the teams regarding the issue so that, you know, they're jumping right on.
We're going to get in trouble.
Let's talk about one more thing, which is CBS Sports, you know, reinstated Shannon Sharp, you know, and I refuse to say anything, you know, evil about Shannon Sharp because he helped my team win the Super Bowl. So, therefore, you know, I'll just tell you that CBS Sports reinstated Shannon Sharp after a restraining order was withdrawn on Shannon Sharp. It was a woman who filed an order of protection against him. And it prompted CBS and Shannon Sharp to, like, you know, pretty much part ways, took a leave of absence. But, you know, she recanted what have you. So Shannon Sharp is actually on his way back to CBS to go back to work. And like I said, I'm not going to say anything wrong about Shannon Sharp other than the fact that he not only did he play for my team, but he was like our mascot at the same time. Because he looked just like a mascot. But that's neither here nor there. Deb, what you want to say about Shannon Sharp in this whole situation?
Nah, Shannon Sharp is just a funny dude to me, but, you know, this situation is kind of serious. I don't know if the allegations were true or not. You know, she basically said he tried to strong-arm the pootie. I hope he didn't really do that, but
he tried to make Ben Walker serve her.
Basically. But, you know, I hope it's not true. Like you said, he got reinstated, so we'll see if he says anything about it, you know, on the pregame show this week, even though that's
on the pregame. Everybody, darkness.
You think somebody got paid?
That could be it, because it went away kind of fast. And, you know, I don't know. That's a possibility. We probably find out some more in, like, the next 10 days or so.
Yeah. Akil, you want to weigh in on this whole thing?
Yeah. All, what's interesting about this story is this is the third time you have a former Super Bowl, well, African-American, former Super Bowl champion, NFL player that's a broadcaster that's been brought up on allegations of sexual impropriety. First you had Michael Irvin not too long ago, so he had to cancel his show last year a little bit before the Super Bowl. And living down here, you know, that's a show I look forward to listening to, and it was a funny show, but soon as somebody gave allegations, he had to cancel the show. And then you had Warren Sapp around the Super Bowl time, down by the Super Bowl, so then they took him off the air, and then now you have Shannon Sharp. So, yeah, that was pretty interesting, you know, because I'm wondering, are these females telling the truth, or are the players telling the truth?
Well, let me ask you guys a question. Didn't Jerome Bettis get in trouble as well?
I don't know. I didn't hear about that.
Yeah, I remember Jerome Bettis. I mean, this is something, you know.
You think, PJ?
Good question. I didn't hear about the Jerome Bettis situation.
Yeah, I mean, and we all know what happened to Lawrence Taylor.
Oh, yeah, and Lawrence Taylor. Man, whew.
And if we sit here and think, we'll probably come up with a bunch of more names. But, you know, basically those are the things that happened while you guys were on the grind today. A lot of different stories, and there's a lot of serious issues here dealing with athletes and women, whether it be the woman reporter in the locker room or the woman and Shannon Sharpe.
Brother,
so I know some people really want to talk about this.
Brother Jimmy, I just wanted to weigh in with my two cents. You know, one of the things that we have to be cognizant of as fans and out here in audience land is allegations are alleged, and you're innocent until proven guilty. And I think that in the eyes of the media and even fans, sometimes it's the opposite. It's guilty until proven innocent. So I like to see people get a fair shake, but by the same token, I think that really what we can, I don't want to say pass judgment on, but give our opinions on, is whether or not these people are using their common sense in the situations they're putting themselves in for this stuff to happen.
I agree. That's a great point. And I agree with you totally. It is innocent until proven guilty, unless you play for the Raiders, because I hate the Raiders. And that's pretty much all I got to say. Hey, Dad, you want to take it from here?
Yeah, I got that. Jim, check that to see if that's PJ on the line, though.
Oh, absolutely.
What we're going to, the unknown joint, what we're going to do now is go into our segment that we call Pass the Rock, you know, basically because there's five of us here, you know, we're going to pass the rock around and basically vent on any issue we have in sports or any, you know, anything going on in sports during the current week or just any issue you have in sports, period. So I'm going to start it off today. I'm going to play the role of the point guard. I'm going to bring the ball up, get the team set up. My rant this week is about Philly fans. All right, now, since I'm a diehard Philly fan who no longer lives in Philadelphia, I find myself constantly defending my Philly fan brethren against what has always seemed to be constant and blatant media exaggeration. Exaggeration that fans of other cities seem to eat with a spoon, like straight up sheep. The attitudes of Philly fans, the violence, the intimidation, the so-called unprovoked booing and turning on our athletes, etc., has all been embellished over the years to the point of legend. And yes, admittedly, many of us own that legend, the myth, the lore, because one, it does have some truth to it to an extent, and two, it's sometimes fun to be perceived as the bully on the block, the gooch, if you will. But hearing sports media figures constantly crap on my city's fans and bringing up the same old half-told stories from 30 and 40 years ago to make their points, that's just starting to get a little old, and it's weighing on me a little bit. If I hear that we threw snowballs at Santa one more time without hearing the actual true backstory, I'm a snap. And now Philadelphia sporting events are so heavily scrutinized and every little ballpark incident is reported on national news. The whole city always shares in the reputation of a few little minor jackasses. I've been to stadiums and arenas all across the country, 40 to be exact, and the same behavior goes on everywhere I go. But in these cases, the entire city doesn't get labeled after every dust-up, and the incidents hardly make the nightly news. It seems as if outsiders always have been envious of our passion we show towards our sports teams. Most of us are all about that immovable loyalty to our team, so excuse me if we occasionally move on from non-performing athletes or athletes who never have or no longer fit the mold of the city in general. However, after hearing and reading much of the silliness that my Philly frat brothers and sisters have been spewing this week about the Kevin Cobb, Mike Vick, Eagles situation after one game, certain aspects of this ongoing media frenzy are getting harder and harder to defend. Look, people, one bad game doesn't make dude Ryan Leaf, and one good game doesn't make him Joe Montana. Have some patience, and even more importantly, stop having unrealistic expectations about this team. Whether Fat Andy is going to admit it or not, the Eagles are rebuilding. So please, everybody, stop jumping to quick conclusions over a couple of bad series from Cobb and a couple of exciting series from Mike Vick, both aided in large part, if I may add, by terrible performances from the offensive line. Bad line play is actually a circumstance that aids in the strength of a runner like Mike Vick while it hinders the strength of a passer like Cobb. The fact of the matter is that many Philly fans don't really care for Cobb in the first place due to the fact that he replaced many of you guys' hero. But don't blame him for decisions made by the organization. If you're a real Birds fan, you will rally around him for now at least and hope he becomes everything the Eagles brass thinks he can become. If he gets a little time and a fair shot from the organizations and from the fans of the city, and then he still turns out to be a bum, then we can pack his bags for him and run his ass out of town with the rest of them. But for now, people, let's not jump to quick judgment because of preconceived notions. Let's be smarter fans than that. Please don't be what everybody thinks we are. Don't be, quote-unquote, Philly fans. All right, my rant is over. I done brought the ball up. I'm steaming. I'm heated. I'm going to go ahead and pass that rock to B. Austin. What you got, brother?
I'm going to take that. My rant for this week, and I appreciate the pass. I'm on the wing. I'm looking at a long three-pointer. I got a beef with LeBron James. Now, it's been 2 months since the decision and that narcissistical spectacle that he put on for the world, which was an hour-long decision, which, you know, it allowed him to say, I'm taking my talent to Miami. I'm going to leave other players out of this and just speak to LeBron James. You came in the league with much fanfare. There's a lot of expectations on your shoulders. I dig that. I understand. Very, very talented brother. My beef isn't so much with him leaving Cleveland as it is the way he did it. What was the point in you calling attention to yourself in a way which could be perceived as being a prima donna, which could be perceived as being an ASS hole? Can I go there, fellas? My beef with LeBron really essentially is you've called attention to breaking the hearts of millions and millions of fans of the Cleveland Cavaliers, and the way you did it was really classless. That's my beef with it. And now most recently, Mark Cuban has spoken to the business side of it. You know, LeBron being a brand, really, with his stardom and fame, you know, how much has his decision to play the role of ASS hole, how much has that really damaged his brand? You know, Mark Cuban seems to... Mark Cuban seems to think that he's dented his value to the tune of $1 billion. I think it's a lot more than that. I think you have to question his character. All right, I'm on the wing. I'm passing the ball. Who's taking the rock?
Akil Bayon. All right, here we go. So I'm on the blocks, and my rant has to do with the University of Michigan quarterback, Denard Robinson. Now, not many people knew who this guy was before the start of the season, but let me just throw out some stats here. Michigan has accounted for 1,005 yards in their first two games, both wins against University of Connecticut and Notre Dame. And he's accounted for 885 of their 1,005. In the last game, he had 258 yards rushing and 244 yards passing, going 24. And one thing I'll add, some other things I'll add, Chris Rodriguez, we all remember Pat White playing for West Virginia, making them a top five school, and Pat White taking snaps out of the shotgun, running for 75 yards, throwing touchdowns, and getting drafted with the 44th pick overall by the Miami Dolphins last year. But he's recently been cut, and now he's playing baseball. So I guess he really is a great athlete. But Darnell Robinson is the same height and weight as Pat White. Rich Rodriguez has instilled the same system. He had to decide what's going with the drop back or inserting a Darnell Robinson type who was like Pat White. And he's completed 70% of his passes. His QB rating is 138. And he's led Michigan to go from unranked to number 20 in the AP poll, number 22 in the USA Today poll, number 19 in the fan poll, and also from South Florida, which held the likes of Edgerrin James, Mike Jenkins, starting QB, cornerback for the my Dallas Cowboys, Michael Irvin, Chad Ochocinco, and historically, Florida ranks number 2 behind California in the number of NFL players, but California has 36 million people, and Florida has 18 million. And Miami itself is number 1 in terms of NFL football players. And, of course, you have the U, where Ray Lewis, that's my rant about Michigan quarterback.
Who's that note? Pass that rock.
And I'm passing the rock to Jimmy.
Okay. Now, let me get something off my chest, Paul. My problem, my rant this week, is people that don't form their own opinions. Now, this really has been bothering me. This has been bothering me. Sports fans in general are just too malleable. The average sports fan, in my opinion, is a mindless individual that just regurgitates anything that the very biased sportscasters on SportsCenter or any other kind of sports media spews out at them. And the thing about it is, I see this not only in sports, but I see this in politics. I see it with most social issues. Anytime people watch TV and they hear, you know, people give their opinions on whatever, they just that becomes their opinion. People do not think for themselves, and it bothers me. I see it in sports a lot, but like I said, I also see it in politics and in every social issue. And it's funny because we talk sports all the time. We often have debate about who's the greatest this and who's the greatest that. And people think I'm crazy when I give my opinions, but the reason I have my opinions is because I put thought into it. I just don't agree with everybody. Most people will tell you that Michael Jordan is the greatest basketball player of all time. First off, I disagree with that. Second off, when I tell people I disagree with that, they get offended. You know, like they're ready to fight for Michael Jordan. But the thing is, I have my reasons for saying that. And am I supposed to, if you want to talk about music, I think Jay-Z is garbage. Am I supposed to like him because everybody else does? But people believe that, and I get in arguments all the time. I see it in politics. Sometimes I question decisions that the president makes, right? But because he's our president, he's an African-American president, people come at me, how could you say such a thing? And I'm thinking, like, you know, I think for myself. I just don't join most bandwagons. And that bothers me because I talk to people every day about different issues, and nobody is able to form their own opinion. And another thing about that is they get persuaded by whatever they see on TV. They get persuaded by statistics. Let's bring it back to sports. They get persuaded by statistics. And that also bothers me as well. They hear stats on SportsCenter. They see highlights on SportsCenter and think they can comment on the game when just watching a highlight, which you can't do. And, you know, I hate to tell this to a lot of people, but statistics do lie. Numbers do lie. Women lie. Men lie. And numbers lie as well, because most people say, well, numbers don't lie. Numbers do lie. So the thing about it is learn to form your own opinion when it comes to anything. This goes beyond sports, but I see it a lot in sports. Devin talked about this whole issue.
Please enter your password, then press pound.
Devin said, what is that? Anyway, Devin talked about the Michael Vick, Kevin Cobb situation, and I heard a lot of people who just pretty much were regurgitating what they saw on SportsCenter. And it really, like, you know, upset me as a true sports fan to hear people not be able to form their own opinion based upon watching the game. So I'm going to stop because I can go for the next 2 hours just talking about this. So what I'm going to do is I'm just going to pass the rock to PJ.
Jimmy. Y'all got me on?
You on?
Yes, sir.
Y'all got me on?
You got the rock. You got the rock. Shoot it.
I didn't even know I was on, man. What's up, fellas? All right, I'm in. And this week, I think I'm going to go in on Floyd Mayweather. Not to get too much into it, but I'm a big boxing fan, man. And Floyd Money Mayweather, he's better known as out in social media land. To me, Floyd is the best pound-for-pound boxer, best pound-for-pound fighter in boxing right now. Being a boxing fan, honestly, he's one of the best boxers that I've ever seen. And I've been following boxing probably since the late 80s, early 90s. Defensively, he's the best defensive fighter I've ever seen. I mean, in terms of giving angles, his head movement, pause, his footwork, his attention to detail on the defensive end, you rarely see. His attention to detail on the offensive end. He's a very precise puncher. He doesn't waste any punches. He's a very accurate puncher. So, you know, the point to me is he's the best right now from what I've seen when you consider the all-around package. That being said,
I need him to stop acting like a punk in regard to the Manny Pacquiao situation. Like, if you really believe that you're the greatest, as he says he is, because he said he was better than Muhammad Ali, and if you believe you're the greatest, and somebody wants to fight you, that's going to be at the same weight you're going to be at, I don't care if they're taking the Barry Bonds, the cream, the snort, whatever they're taking, you should be willing to rumble that person just because of the fact you believe you're the best. So basically, he puts Manny Pacquiao out there. He comes at Manny Pacquiao and basically says, I need you to take a drug test. So Manny Pacquiao agrees to it. Then he says, you know, he wants to make the drug test a little bit more intricate. So he wants to take hair samples and skin grafts and, you know, swabs of the saliva and all kinds of crazy stuff. And Manny Pacquiao was like, yo, I'm not going to that extent. The boxing commission don't make me do it. Why would Floyd Mayweather? My point is, in wrapping all this up, you say you're the best. You go online, you disrespect Manny Pacquiao on Ustream, making racial slurs and all kinds of stuff like that. If you really believe you're the best, don't run from the man. You're from the streets, you're from the hood, you know that there's no, if you're going to call somebody out and, you know, say that you're better than them, somebody wants to fight you, don't go talking about them and then say I won't fight you. That's it.
Slam dunk. And the crowd goes.
The Rock. I just dunk The Rock. And thank you to meet you. I'm going to pass that rock back to Dad.
All right. So, Jimmy, you can go ahead and, Akil, you're going to go ahead and do a quick media blast before we get into these topics.
Yeah, here we go, the media blast. Check out our website at www.warroomsports.com. Click on the Contact Us tab to send a message to us about our company or our show. Or if you'd like to send an email to one of the hosts personally, all of our individual email accounts are on that page. Become a fan of ours on Facebook at www.facebook.com/warroomsports. You can follow us on Twitter at www.twitter.com/warroomsports. For general inquiries, email us at info@warroomsports.com. Join the chat room right now during the show at www.blogtalkradio.com/the war room. To get into the chat room, you need to sign up for a free profile on the Blog Talk Radio website. If you don't want to create an account, you can sign in through your Facebook or Twitter account. And while you're at it, click on Favorites to make The War Room one of your favorite Blog Talk Radio shows and to get updates about the show. We will be taking questions and reading posts from Facebook, Twitter, and the chat room during the show. To call in to the show and speak with one of our hosts, you can dial 323-410-0012. Press 1 when prompted. Pressing 1 is like raising your hand. And who knows, the War Room professors just might call on you.
All right, y'all. So right now, what we're going to do, we're going to bring on our special guest for the day. He's a friend of ours. He's our college sports contributor. He's a Howard grad, like a few of us on here. I'm going to introduce everybody to my man, Victor Vic Nice Montgomery.
What's up, fellas? How's everybody doing?
What's up, Vic?
What's up, fellas? Good to hear you guys, man. You guys are on a tight ship, man.
Yeah, we're trying. You know, we knew it this. We're trying to get it down pat. But we're going to jump right into this college football season with you real quick.
Okay.
Yo, it's been wild so far. So basically, let's go back to last week and just get your thoughts on some of the games. You know, some of these games were stunners. You know, there were some upsets. You know, there were some good teams playing each other, so you really couldn't call the win an upset. But what did you think about that Miami loss to Ohio State?
Well, the Miami loss was actually something that I expected just because I got an opportunity to look at Ohio State's defense, which is pretty solid, and all the reports that I was reading from some of the scouts, especially the pro scouts, is that Terrell Pryor really went to work this summer and worked on his game. he wasn't really that effective in that game if you watch that game, but the defense really came to play. And I knew that Miami was going to struggle because if you looked at even the first half of the FAMU game, or whatever the case, you can tell that, you know, I know you guys know a lot about the defensive lines and the offensive lines, but you can tell that they was going to struggle between the hashes. And that's pretty much what happened. Ja'Cory Harris threw four picks. He was supposed to be a Heisman candidate, whatever the case, but you can tell that they didn't give him so much time, and he's not as fast as they were saying outside of the box or whatever, what we call, you know, the pass box. So I wasn't really surprised about that. Ohio State's defense is going to sneak up on a lot of people in the Big Ten. I actually think they're going to run the table in the Big Ten, and I definitely think they're going to be a pretty good match for Michigan. I think they got the linebackers to keep up with Denard Robinson.
What about Florida State? They got drilled by Oklahoma. I mean, that may be something else that people expected. Maybe not the way it happened, but, you know, Florida State, they're not what they once were.
Florida State kind of caught me off guard. You know, they did look good, and what I saw the week before, and I just, you know, Oklahoma just came to play. I think this is the first time that the ACC has stepped out and played a Big 12 component in a long time. I mean, I'm sorry, a Big 12 opponent in a long time. And I just think that's one of those games where, you know, they say you can lose any on any given day. And I just think Florida State, they were thinking probably, you know, they're going to be able to touch the quarterback a little bit. Sam Bradford's gone. Tailbacks are gone. They got, you know, pretty much a whole new system. But, you know, the coach is still there. You know, Bob Stoops is the man. He's been the man. He's been proven. His defense is always, you know, it's been pretty solid. So it kind of caught me off guard. We're going to see what Jimbo Fisher can do as the rest of the ACC schedule plays out.
Now, what got me last week was, and I'm sure, you know, you living in this area right along with me, the whole Virginia Tech thing. How do they lose to James Madison? How does that happen?
I hate to say it. I'm just going to have to say it's coaching. Frank Beamer didn't come to play. He had those guys ready. I think that they slept on Boise State, and I'm actually glad that Boise State was able to get that win in D.C. because they played at Redskins Stadium, I believe. But, you know, playing out of the WAC conference, they got two games this year that are going to be, you know, the top two games. I mean, the toughest games on the schedule. Now it's the Vitek game, supposedly. And then the Oregon game coming up. So for Virginia Tech to drop that one in JMU, it just tells me that they didn't have a good week of practice and that, you know, they were still stuck on being Boise State. And in actuality, they should have been, you know, be ready to play because Boise State was a pretty good opponent. So
yeah, see, but this is what gets me now because I'm actually, you know, because of the BCS system and everything that's going on with that, I'm actually a proponent for schools right now like Boise State and TSU. I mean, but the thing is, that loss by Virginia Tech to JMU, that may have messed Boise's season up. Because,
yeah,
you know, once you go to Central Schedule, if Virginia Tech ends up being garbage, even if they get better from this point on, they lost to James Madison. So now all of a sudden it's not looking like, you know, it's not looking like Boise did too much of anything week one. Because Vitek laid an egg the next week.
Appalachian State all over again. If you remember that season when Michigan lost to Appalachian State, they actually got better.
Yeah.
I don't think they dropped any more games past that. I mean, they lost to Ohio State, but they pretty much ran the table in the Big Ten after that. It's going to be the same thing. No matter how many games they win, they can beat people by 40 every game. They're not going to be able to go to a major bowl or a BCS bowl because of the JMU loss. You know, so.
Right.
And it's unfortunate for Boise State because that game, if they drop one more game or if they play Oregon close, that's going to keep them outside of the top five. We'll watch how the polls go, but I'm pretty sure they're going to lose their ranking. What are they ranked now? I think they're ranked three or four. They'll fall out of the top five easy, no question.
All right. So here's a situation that might be brewing down in Alabama. I don't know how much of a situation it is because, you know, in college it's a lot.
It's a good situation to have.
Yeah, you have a multi-back system in most universities. But, you know, as everybody knows, Mark Ingram, the Heisman winner from last year, started the season injured. His replacement, Trent Richardson, has been more than solid in his stead. I mean, but even I heard rumblings before the season that
Trent Richardson, you know, that Mark Ingram might not be, even though he's the Heisman, you know, defending champion right now, he might not be the best running back on his team. And Trent Richardson put up 144 yards versus Penn State last week. You know, that's my school. I mean, that's my team right there. That was the first 100-yard rusher that they allowed in the last 17 games. You know, this guy comes in, does his thing, had like 98 yards in the first quarter.
Right.
What's your opinion on that? I mean, I heard you say it's a good situation to have.
Yeah, it's a good situation to have for Alabama. First of all, I think Alabama is unquestionably the best team in the country. If you watch them play their defense, they really don't have any holes. And this new kid they got at quarterback is going to be able to do his thing. Actually, if I had to pick right now, if I was an NFL GM, I would take Richardson over Ingram just because he's Brad's kind of guy. Brad, you don't mind me calling you out. But he's a between-the-tackle guy, and he got bounce. I mean, he can get to the corner really quick, get to the flats. He's got some speed. I don't know what they list him at. I heard scouts saying that they had him at a 4.5, 4.5 low, 4.4 high. But with that kind of size and him being able to take a couple hits or two, if he runs low, he keeps low to the ground, he doesn't fumble. That's going to be, you know, as you watch the backs like the Mojo Drews or the Ray Rices in the NFL, I mean, that's the kind of back that people are looking for. But they're both good. I mean, I think that, you know, they can easily against some of the weaker teams. And the weaker teams get an SEC, against the SEC, like the Ole Misses, maybe the Tennessees this year. They can get 150 a pop. They're that good. As a matter of fact, I would probably put them, both of them, among the top five tailbacks in the country, if not one and two, respectively.
All right. So I don't know if everybody out in war room land knows that Vic is a big Notre Dame fan. That's his squad. So I would
Killed
be remiss
that.
If I didn't. I'd be remiss if I didn't bring up Denard Robinson straight up destroying your squad last week, like PJ mentioned earlier.
It was a kill, actually.
Kill.
It was a kill.
Kill, my bad.
Hey, sorry about that, Vic. Sorry about that, man.
Two TDs to go along with his 258 rushing. He was 24 for 40 for 244 yards passing and a touchdown. Yo, the dude, he accounted for 502 of their 532 total yards. I mean, it was a good game. It was a close game. So how'd you feel watching all that go down?
Well, I can tell you how I felt. I was sick to my stomach. I know Brad has a big smile on his face. Kill, I appreciate the shout out. I figured you knew I was on when you were talking about it. But at the end of the day, I mean, I can't be mad. I mean, to watch that entire game, and I was telling people, the thing about Michigan is Fortier is not that bad. I mean, he's a good kid. I mean, he beat us last year, or whatever the case. So for him to get his spot taken by this kid tells you how good this kid really is. But, Kill, I have to disagree with you a little bit. I mean, he did put 500 yards on us by himself, and, you know, he certainly passed at a high percentage. But if you watch that game closely, and as a fan, you know I did, 65%, if not 70% of those passes that he threw were in the flats. He's not an accurate quarterback. He's got an arm like Michael Vick, but he's not accurate at all. So it's going to be
– I saw another Mike Vick coming on.
Yeah. It's going to – well, he's also short. He's not a tall guy at all. He's probably under 6 foot, if not 6 foot. But the thing is, it's going to be nice to see how defense is playing from here on out. I mean, they're probably going to stack the box and force him to beat him with his arm, which I think is going to be tough for him. If you watch, he had a couple passes. I think I counted three or four where he was hitting linemen because he's that short. But the thing is, he runs – he's a 4-4. So once he gets out, if you don't get on him, he's gone. So –
He might turn into a Darren Sproles or something.
He's not that short, but he's going to be some sort of special teams guy or
Wildcat
what they call a special package guy. Yeah, because unless between now and the time he gets a shot, I don't know how accurate he's going to be as a quarterback. He didn't look good at all. But the thing about Michigan, again, Denard Robinson's the show. They go as he goes. So if he comes out and throws a bunch of picks, they stack the box, he can't get out. They stack some safeties on him, the spy. They got some fast linebackers that run 4-5s, which Ohio State does. He's going to have a problem. but they don't have a secondary. If you watch that game, we beat the secondary with our tight end. Our tight end took about a 60-yard bomb to the house. It was a 20-yard catch he took to the crib.
Now, you know, we all smart sports fans, so we pretty much know if he doesn't get coached up, we pretty much know how his professional career is going to look, how that's going to translate to the NFL. But for now, like, is he a Heisman favorite? Got to be for now, right?
I don't think there's any question that this kid is the best thing smoking in college football.
He's responsible. He's responsible. This is B. Austin. He's responsible for 885 yards of offense, which leads some schools.
No argument there. I agree. I mean, again, for college football, absolutely. He's got to be a Lee Heisman candidate.
We got to call him Mr. Robinson.
Yeah.
You got to call him
Mr. Robinson. I hate to take that from David.
Real quick, let me throw that number out there. If anybody want to get on, you got any college football questions for Vic or anybody in the war room, you can hit us up at 323-410-0012. Again, that's 323-410-0012. Press 1 when you're prompted, and we'll see if we can get you on. But Vic, real quick, since we're kind of running behind. Oh, go ahead.
Vic, can I ask him a question before we go? This is Jimmy. Vic, I want to ask you a question before we let you go. Right now, well, there's a couple hot topics which deal with college football, and I just want to know what your opinion is because you're a huge college football fan, and I want to know what your opinion is of Reggie Bush forfeiting the Heisman, and also what's your take on athletes taking gifts? I just want to know what your opinion is considering you're a huge college football fan.
Okay, I'll try to answer that as best as I can. Dad, we got enough time for that because it's going to be a long one.
I'm
going to brief it really quick. As far as the Heisman, the letter of the law goes, relevant to what's on the ballot, the kid's got to be eligible in order to be eligible to win the Heisman. So the NCAA, which is the governing body, is going to come back and say the kid wasn't eligible. Then he would have never won the Heisman in the first place. But that's their thinking. So I think it's right. Absolutely not, because at the point that, and I think it's a class move, let me go on record and say it's a class move that he was able to forfeit the Heisman before they took it from him, however the case, which shows, for his career, that was a good move. It shows he was humble. I imagine some advisors or some people around him talked to him and was like, hey, you know, it's better to fall on your sword now than to have your head chopped off later.
He didn't admit to anything wrong, though. He did forfeit it, but he still at this point has not admitted to any wrongdoing.
Right, and I think from a PR standpoint, he really doesn't have to say that he did anything wrong over the case, but the gesture itself is going to speak volumes.
Okay.
However,
okay.
The point I'm making is, at the end of the day, NCAA and the Heisman, well, not so much the Heisman Trust, I think they felt like they was back in the corner, so you can kind of separate them from that. But bottom line, NCAA is a hypocrite. I mean, they're going to take the wins from USC. They're going to force USC to return their Heisman. They're going to take the banners down. They're going to erase Reggie Bush's name from the record, but they're not going to return all that money they made off Reggie Bush. You know what I mean? Like, you know, they're not going to come up with whatever was made in that season, a lump sum, and give it to charity. They're not going to do that. So, you know, I'm on the fence because it's hard. I can imagine, you know, Reggie Bush, he comes from humble beginners like most of us. And, you know, he's making all this money for the school. I mean, I'm sure if we dig down into the coffers, we'll see more than probably 75% of these Heisman winners, whatever the case, took money
at
some point.
Imagine
that. Right.
I totally agree.
But let me chime in, the point that he made when he first started that answer is kind of what I was trying to say last week. I didn't really get a chance to finish what I was saying because I had to leave. But, I think – I'm not saying that I'm a conformist, but rules are there. You know, rules are put in place for a reason. Now, I don't like the system. I think the rules need changing. They definitely need changing. But you can't go out and break them and then you just use the justification of, well, they're bad rules, so I'm going to break them. You know, something else has to be done. You know, you can't justify it that way. So that's basically all I was trying to say last week. I know that the rules are bad. I call it college pimping, but – you just can't break the rules just because you don't like them.
Yeah. I hate to bring this up, but it's just like the catch. It's just like the catch with Megatron. I mean, that was a touchdown, but the exactly. letter of the law says it wasn't. So,
but see, this is Jimmy. I just want to make a point. I agree with you, Devin, that there are rules in place. But see, the problem is people act as though we live in a black and white world. Like this is the rule can't be broken. But in my opinion, we live in a great world. You know, it's sort of like this. All right, there's a law against speeding. But if I'm going down the street and I'm behind a truck and things fall off of that truck, if I speed to go around it and avoid an accident, should you still give me a speeding ticket? I mean, I broke the law, but, you know,
exactly.
it's a gray area. And it's the same thing catch with Megatron. It's like, you know, we live in a gray world. It's not black and white. So I think that is deeper than just saying he broke the law, he broke a rule, is this. And I think it's the same exact thing with that catch in the Lion King. I understand.
But if you allow certain things, you're kind of opening Pandora's box because then you got to be
Absolutely.
Consistent. Every single time
exactly.
it happens again.
Absolutely.
So
that's
kind of
and that's the problem.
Yeah.
That's why I think that is not a clear-cut answer when it comes to this.
Right.
No, yeah,
but
it's a tough way. Yeah, I'm sorry.
Vic, we run a little behind, so, yo, we want to thank you for coming on. Everybody, Vic's going to be with us a lot, you know, throughout the college season, and then when basketball starts, then we're really going to get into it. So,
hold on for 1 second. We have a call coming in. Maybe they want to speak to Vic. Before we let you go, well, it looks like they're going now, so. Here they go. They're back on. They may want to speak to
Vic.
What's that?
That's Brad.
Want to take this call?
That's Brad.
Okay. Hey, Vic, one last thing. Hey, sorry for the timing with the Denard Robinson thing. I formulated my opinion after the UConn game and then saw the Notre Dame, and I was like, oh, man, I know Vic is a diehard Notre Dame, so sorry about that.
No, it's all good. I wasn't feeling too bad because Penn State took one, so I wasn't mad.
Okay.
Stop it. All right, so we see you probably in a couple weeks when we have some more more stuff to talk about for college football. So that's Victor Montgomery, everybody, our college football contributor.
Thanks,
guys.
Have a great
weekend. Okay, Dev, I got it from here, Dev. Let's get into another topic. We just had a good discussion about college football and a serious topic of what you call it, college pimping. Well, let's talk about another serious topic. And, you know, everybody has heard about this. It's been on, you know, the news and all the sports stations in regards to female reporters in the locker room. Everybody knows what happened in the Jets situation. But my question is, overall, should female reporters be in the locker room? Should reporters be in the locker room, period?
That's actually what I was about to say when you asked that. The whole female thing in the locker room, that's probably going to get us in trouble tonight. But before I touch on that, I do think that it's kind of crazy anyway. Like, they can't mandate some time, 15 minutes or so, after everybody gets showered and gets dressed and comes out of the locker room for people to ask questions. Like, do they really need to stand there with microphones in your face while you got water dripping down your back and a towel wrapped around you? You know what I mean? Like, is that really the image? Plus, they put this stuff on TV. So, you know, I just don't think it's necessary, period. Now, as far as females in the locker room, you know, we got the whole equality thing. You know, females can do everything that males can do. But you have to expect some sort of, you know, childish behavior when you have somebody that looks like, because we know, you know, Inez Sainz, however you pronounce her name, when you have somebody that looks like that in the locker room, and you're around like 53 guys with testosterone levels going through the roof, something like this is bound to happen. I'm not justifying it at all, but something like this is bound to happen.
Yeah. I agree.
I mean, I totally get what you're saying. But, you know, my thing is, well, let me ask you a question. Do you think that the way she dresses, because there's been a lot of news made about how she's dressed, and I remember when I first heard the story, I went and looked her up. And first off, the news station she works for, are they a serious news station anyway? Everything I saw when I looked at the station has been like, it doesn't seem like they're a serious news station, for one. For two, does the way she dressed have anything to do with it?
Personally, I think it's a situation where Yeah, she should have the right to wear whatever she wants to wear in the locker room. But in situations, you got to know what you wear, what type of response that's going to elicit. For example, that's like if, you know, she has a right to wear what she wants to. I have a right to put on a shirt that says, I'm rich, biatch, and carry a see-through trash bag full of $100 bills and walk down Richard Allen Projects at about 11:30 at night. You know what I'm saying? Screaming with music blasts and drawing attention to myself. If somebody puts a gun to my head, what did you say?
I said, but it might not be the smartest thing to do.
Right, exactly. If somebody puts the gun to my head and robs me, you know, I have every right to walk around bragging about my money, carrying my money, showing my money to anybody. But if somebody robs me because I'm in one of the roughest neighborhoods in the city when I do it, I mean, you know, I should have expected that. I'm not, obviously that's not right. It's not fair that he took my money or I got robbed, but I probably shouldn't have been bragging about my money or showing it. So that,
right,
you know, circles back to what she's wearing, and I guess, you know, that's an issue sometimes, I guess, a lot of people run into. Sometimes what they wear may elicit a certain response that they say they don't want, but, I mean, you know what it's going to do. It's not right, but you know what it's going to, what's going to happen. So
I kind of equate that to, like, the Michael Vick situation, like when he got in trouble in the club and everybody kept saying, well, you know, it's nothing wrong with it, but then there was people on the other side like, well, no, there isn't anything wrong with it, but you got to know what positions you're putting yourself in. And, you know,
yeah, that's true. Let's see. Where's B. Austin? And B. Austin, I want to see what you think about this whole situation.
I'm gonna go all the way in and keep it 100 with our listeners out there. My position is a woman does not belong in a male locker room at any level, high school, college, professional. It shouldn't be. And I'm gonna put it out there like this. In a WNBA game, after they're done showering, there's no way that you would have a male member of the media in their locker room. Yo, you can't have women in the locker room. Outlandish.
Yeah, that's well. I agree, Brad. I agree.
Well, look,
Brad,
everybody.
Around, just like the boy, I'm gonna go even further, and I'm not condoning Clinton Portis's idiocy. But kind of like he said, you got 53 men fresh out the shower with, you know what I'm saying, packages everywhere, and he's in the locker room. Pause. And we say pause, people. We cannot say no homo. We don't want to offend any of our listeners.
Look,
I think you already did. We have a call on the line.
Yeah, go ahead and take that.
Let's take this call and see if they want to, you know, speak on this topic. You're in the war room, 202-215. You're in the room. Who is your name? Where you calling from?
It's Nairobi from Baltimore. I thought y'all was about to put my whole phone number out there. I was about to go off.
No. Nairobi, what's good? What's your opinion?
Hey, guys. How you doing? First of all, Brad, shame on you. Shame on you for saying that women should not be in the locker room. I have a couple points on this. Women should definitely be allowed in locker rooms. If that's where the interviews are taking place, then I think they should definitely be allowed in locker rooms.
So a man
but
should
also,
be...
I'm sorry, say that again.
I'm saying, as an athlete, I'm not even going to say professional. We don't need that designation. But you're coming out of the shower. You just completed competing in a game. You've taken a shower. That's an intimate time for you and your teammates. And when I say intimate, I'm not talking about you. Just it's a
pause.
You're building camaraderie. You shouldn't have to be on your guard. But even beyond that, it's inappropriate for a man to be in a locker room.
Let me ask you this. If you're saying across the board, whether they're male reporters or female reporters, they should not be in the locker room, that's fine. But if you're saying male reporters should be allowed but female reporters shouldn't, I disagree with that. But on the same
sports, I don't want a male reporter in her locker room.
Okay, that's your opinion. Yeah. My opinion is, I have a different opinion, that if you're going to allow men reporters in, you have to allow female reporters in. But on the same note, if a female reporter is in the male locker room after a game and she dresses a particular way, not saying it's right, I think she knew exactly the emotions that her outfit would evoke. And I think this is blowing up way more than she expected it to. She had no idea that it would have gotten this big. She knew exactly what she wore. She goes for shock value. So I think this is blown up bigger than she even expected. Yes, she absolutely did. She absolutely did.
You know what I actually heard today? I actually heard today that she didn't even report this. That's what she said. That's her story.
She did not. I think the NFL, whoever reported
it. When it first broke, they said she tweeted something, though. She tweeted that she felt really uncomfortable in the Jets locker room. So that's one of that social media thing that Jimmy talked about last week. You can't.
I think it blew it up way more than it needed to be. And I think she wears things to get attention. Like sometimes as a female, she's using what she has to gain access to whatever. But at the same time, she's using what she has to gain access, but she also has to be aware that it will evoke some kind of emotion from these testosterone-filled men. Not saying that it's right, because at the end of the day, the responsibility is on the man not to react, but that's not always going to happen. Men are going to react at times, even when it's inappropriate or unwarranted, they will react, and I think she's well aware of that. And I think at the end of the day, she's okay with that.
Listening to your view in terms of saying that women should be able to go into a men's locker room if they're a reporter, you know, they should be able to go in and just like a male. Do you feel the same way in terms of a woman? In terms of a woman's locker room? So do you feel that, like, men reporters should be allowed into a woman's locker room?
I absolutely believe there's a double standard. Now, this is a double standard that works in a women's favor for once. Because there's a lot of double standards that mostly benefit men. But I think in this situation, there's absolutely a double standard that men should not be. Many may completely disagree, but I do believe there should be a double standard when it comes to men being in women's locker rooms after a game. Absolutely.
Yeah.
I could be dead wrong and make absolutely no sense, but there is a double standard. You all have to admit, double standards do exist. They do exist, and most of the time they're in the favor of men. But this time, this is what I don't think that men should be in female.
I disagree with them being in the favor of men all the time, but I agree they exist.
For example, if a guy gets a lot of girls, it's for the most part not a bad thing. If it's the other way around, a girl deals with a lot of guys, not so much, not a good look.
But think about it on the other side with men. If a man like makes a comment to a woman, or you know comes on to a woman. Say, for example, in the workforce, it'll depend on how stringent the workplace is. But for example, in the workforce, then, you know, it's usually a little bit different than if a woman makes an advance or, you know, says something in a flirtatious manner to a man. So, like, that double standard works for women as well. Because,
that definitely depended upon the workplace, because I have been in some very different kind of workplaces where it's just whatever. Double standards do exist. And I just don't think that when women are in the locker room getting interviews, I don't think they're gawking at the men or things like that. But I just don't feel as comfortable if it was the other way around. Because
I totally understand where you're coming from. And you see, in my opinion, I don't think that anyone belongs in a locker room. You know, like, first off, most of us don't get our information that way anyway. The players are tweeting themselves, so we know what's going on. But I don't think anyone belongs in the locker room, whether it be male or female. That'll solve that
and
whole
story.
And I can
respect that.
I don't even think the owner belongs in the locker room.
But Bradley said, men in, women out.
Well, you know, I understand.
All right, well, we got to move on, so. Thanks for your call.
No problem. Talk to you later.
All right. Bye-bye. Yeah, that's a crazy debate. You know, I'm with you. I'm like, I don't understand why people are in the locker room, period.
You just give it to everybody, and then that problem is over with at that point. Everybody's going, so the problem's solved.
Right. I don't even think owners should be in the locer room.
So I'm very doing that.
Yeah, he down there giving out game balls like he coached the game or something. But
yeah, he's whack. Anyway,
Yeah, so, I mean, that's a hot topic that's out there, and, I mean, a lot of people are talking about it, and, you know, I know that people are talking about it. What are they saying in the chat room?
Yeah, chat room, they're saying some stuff. a lot of people are saying that, you know, some people are saying that women should be, some say that they shouldn't. Some people are saying that, you know, ain't nothing that nobody's never seen before. So we got all kinds of...
Yeah, we got
the chat room is off the hook. I will say that on this particular topic.
We got Naran Mercer in the chat room, and he basically says, you know, she put it on a social media network, but she didn't know. Like, come on. You know, because you can go out and say, I didn't report it. But if you just tweet it to a million people, what do you think you just did? You reported it.
You did report it.
Yeah. And I think, just like Nairobi said, I think she's wearing what she wears to get the attention from the guys so she can get the story, so they will talk to her, so they will turn their head. But at the same time, you got to deal with what comes on the other end of that, meaning you might hear remarks that you don't want to hear. People might say
stuff
to you. You might get
Let's put it like this, though. Let's put it like this. Until this happened, none of us knew who she was, and now we all know who she is. And on the other hand, I think
that she's mission accomplished on her, about her.
Exactly. Mission accomplished. That's the bottom line. The bottom line is
Jimmy,
you know
what?
Who she is now.
I guarantee you, she and within the next 2 years, she's going to be on Dancing with the Stars.
Absolutely.
Guarantee.
I agree. But anyway, yeah, let's move on from this topic because we got to get to some football.
DJ, you want
to
let everybody know how to get in contact with us?
Yeah, let me get this media blast out there if everybody want to get in touch with us. You can check us out on our website at www.warroomsports.com. Click on the Contact Us page, or tab, rather, and it'll take you to the contact page. You can fill out a form, send us an inquiry about our show, about us, you know, about our company, anything. Also on that page, you'll see we have our personal email addresses on there. So if you want to, you know, speak to us personally, you can contact us that way. You can become our fan on Facebook at facebook.com/warroomsports. You can follow us on Twitter at www.twitter.com/warroomsports. And for general inquiries, you can just email us at info@warroomsports. And we invite you to join the chat room. Like I said, there's some good conversation going, communication and conversation going on in the chat room. You can get there by going to blogtalkradio.com/the war room. Now, to get into the chat room, you need to sign up for a free profile on Blog Talk Radio. If you don't want to create an account, you can actually sign in through Facebook or Twitter. And once you're in, you might as well go ahead and hit the favorites tab to make the war room, you know, one of your favorite blog talk shows. And you'll be able to keep up with us and our updates and communicate with us as need be. If you want to call in the show, the number is 323-410-0012. Again, that number is 323-410-0012. If you want to speak to us, press 1, and we'll know that you want to get in. Essentially, pressing 1 is like raising your hand. So, hey, raise your hand, let us know you want to talk to us, and you never know. One of the war room professors may call on you and open up the dialogue. With that said, right, I'll kick it back over to Dev so we can talk about, get into our next segment.
All right, we're going to talk briefly on this. We're running a little behind, and I know everybody out there want to get into that NFL talk. So we're going to talk briefly on Team USA and the FIBA World Championships. So, you know, basically congrats to the Team USA for winning the FIBA gold this week. I just want to get you fellas' opinion on, first of all, since we haven't gotten a chance to talk about it before, what was your opinion on the makeup of the team? You know, because that's a big deal now with Team USA basketball. They want to make sure you get the right components. It's not just throw your best 12 guys out there anymore. So what do y'all think about the makeup of the team?
I'll go first. In terms of the team, what was interesting was that no one from the 2008 gold medal winning team was on a 2010 team. I don't know if they felt like, hey, you know what, I'm going to rest this summer. The World Championships aren't that important. I'll save it for the Olympics, or, you know, or they had other things to do. But I think the way they chose the team was good. I don't think that Rajon Rondo should have made it down to the final cut, just knowing that his game doesn't really fit international play. He can't shoot. He's not overly strong, and which is the reason why they finally cut him. But I think the fact that he helped lead Boston to Game 7 of the NBA championship, along with, you know, the three other good players, I think they said, okay, hey, we can't not invite him, so let's bring him on. And I think Kevin Durant was the difference. My prediction, I went bronze because they didn't have enough star power or a go-to guy, but Durant definitely stepped up and I think won the whole thing for him.
Right. He was actually the third leading scorer in the tournament at 22.8 a game. He was behind Luis Scola for Argentina, who averaged 27.1, and Kirk Penny from New Zealand, who averaged 24.7. Somebody's about to say something?
This B. Austin, being War Room Sports' unofficial FIBA correspondent, and I was on hand to see the games in Ankara and Istanbul, I have to tell you that there was absolutely electric, people. It was electric. I didn't really make the trip to Turkey. I just watched every game on ESPN2 and ESPN. I have to, you know, just to buttress Kiel's points, I have to say that defense, an old cliche rang true here, defense definitely wins championships. And I think that Coach K understood that, and he put his best foot forward in taking the very best athletes that he had at his disposal and putting them in a position to make defensive plays and allowing Russell Westbrook and Derrick Rose come to mind, as well as Andre Iguodala and Rudy Gay. But putting them in that position, Team USA really demonstrated athletic dominance. It wasn't even so much that they bought into the FIBA play, you know, especially offensively, but they really locked in and locked down when they needed to. Andre Iguodala, who's really one of the unsung heroes, he was playing out of position. Those of you who watch or follow NBA basketball know that Iggy's a perimeter player. He plays the two and the three, predominantly the three. In FIBA play, he was playing at the power forward. His athleticism was so vastly beyond the man that he was guarding or the man guarding him. It was just, it was crazy. You know, he was jumping two and three times before the counterpart on the opposite squad was off the ground. You know, things like that.
Hey, Austin, what do you, not to cut you off, what do you think about this? Because I ran in the chat room, basically is asking, he's like, what about Jennings not being allowed to try out? You know, one of the top rookies didn't even get an invite. And, you know, Jennings kind of thinks that's because most of the guys on the team were Nike guys. You think that played a little part in that?
It could have played a part. I don't think that they would have gained anything in having Jennings. And here's why I say – or lost, for that matter. And here's why I say that. Because the international play on the perimeter is a lot more physical – you need a more durable, strong guard who can stand up against the hand-checking and shenanigans that the FIBA refs allow.
Like a Derrick Rose.
Jennings is very light in the behind, and that's not a knock to him because I love his game. I love his game. I enjoy watching him play. But I think having somebody of Diddy Billups' size and no homo, having Eric Gordon and having Derrick Rose able to break down the defense, even in the face of hand-checking and packed-in zones, that's really what they needed. That's what they needed. They didn't need a really flashy, super quick guard. They just needed people that could stand up under the pressure of being hand-checked and grabbed and groped and clothesline going to the basket.
But you do realize he played a year of international ball.
I do. That's not
granted, they, you know, they say he really didn't get that much clock.
Let me speak on this real quick. I don't want to, you know, take a bunch of time talking about FIBA, but I have a couple comments. First off, Brandon Jennings not making a team. I felt bad until I recently saw a YouTube video of him dancing Lady Gaga. Now I officially think he shouldn't have went. That's one point. My second point is, the dude Luis Scola, he got major games. Cause this dude is slow. He can't jump, yet he's always productive. Always productive. 20 and 8, 18
Strong
and 10.
Basketball IQ.
This dude has yo, this dude has no athletic ability. Like, he can't jump. Like, he runs like, you know, he's like stuck in syrup or something. Like, but this guy has major game because when you just gave me his stat line, I'm like, here he goes again. Like,
yeah.
When I watch him
like
play
how?
In the NBA, like, yeah, like, how's he do this? Like, this guy's got major
the
game.
FIBA game. The FIBA game is a more cerebral game because they're allowed to play a lot more physical, and they're not dealing with a lot of the uber athletes that you see in the NBA. So even Team USA, I saw some defensive liabilities and lapses there. They just overwhelm their opponents with athleticism. If you allow
but what
them
about,
to five,
I said Scola does this in the league, though. He does, like, if you watch the game and you don't even realize
no,
doing the game.
There's no substitute for knowing how to play the game.
Yeah,
there's
I just
no
want
substitute.
To give him the spot.
Yeah, he's nice. And I'll tell you who else shined in that tournament. Linus Kaleza, he balled out. He balled out on every squad except for the U.S. He got it.
Oh, 1 second, brother, 1 second. If anybody want to call in and get into this conversation about Team USA real quick, that number again is 323-410-0012. All right, go ahead, bro.
He balled out, and a lot of that is due to him just knowing how to play the game. A lot of these guys – they're not the greatest of athletes, but their skill level is so high, and that comes from a very young age. Here in the U.S., we're pigeonholed. If you're tall, you go in the post. If you're little, you're going on the going at the point. If you're athletic and kind of in between, you're going on the wing. In Europe, they don't pigeonhole. You can be 6'7", 6'6", and get a look at the one. And really, all of their big men, because they set the picks and they run that pick and roll so far away from the basket, all of their big men have J work, have major J work. So you're dealing with highly skilled players and playmakers from the one through the five. So, yeah, they may not be athletes, but their skill level is so high that they can compensate for a lack of athleticism.
Now, do y'all think that like the bigger dogs, the LeBrons, the D-Wades, Kobe, Bosh, whatever, y'all think they're going to come back and try to play in 2012? Like,
yes.
I'm thinking to myself, like, this summer might be rest for them.
Means the rest of the world. The rest of the world really places a premium on the world championships. The USA believes that the Olympics is the higher cause, so to speak.
Right. Well, you know, you have to do well in this to qualify, but at the same time, if the U.S. had to send their team with those, top-flight players on it, and they had to go into the Olympic qualifying rounds, I really don't think they would have a problem in qualifying. So, you know, but where does this leave? I mean, not just what he did in this FIBA tournament, but, you know, he's the youngest player to lead the league in scoring. Where does the past 5 or 6 months leave Kevin Durant, you know, in the pecking order in the NBA right now? Kill?
I would say, man, you got Kobe, then you got LBJ Wade, and then I think Durant is right there.
They like
I
one
think Durant
dude?
Is right there.
LBJ Wade, like, you know,
yeah, LBJ Wade. There you go.
I think Durant is right in there. I think this is just another, like, level up the notch, his performance over, like, the past 4 months. Like, that just brings him up another notch toward the elite, to me. I mean, you it's funny because you watch this guy grow, like, from season to season. I mean, hell, from month to month, you watch him grow and the things that he does and the way he dominates and how and his knowledge of the game. And that's what's impressive to me. It's always impressive to me to see a young guy that plays the game the right way and is smart about how he plays the game. And I think that's another thing, outside of his talent, he's a smart player. And I think that's one thing that's going to set him aside. And he also has that, and I feel like he has that instinct in him to sort of kind of like the Kobe's of the world, not the LeBron's, but the Kobe's of the world, and like the Michael Jordan's greatest basketball player ever to play the game type of thing in him that kind of sets him apart. I said he is those guys, but I feel like he has that in him where he tries to take the game over. He tries to stomp on your throat when he has you and you know, not try to be your friend and do the kid and play after the game. He just wants to win. I'll talk to y'all later. I like that. I mean, that's a personal thing I like about his attitude, and I think I see that type of attitude in some of the greats that have played the game.
But you look at the dude and you wonder how he does it. I mean, look how slight he is. When he got drafted, the whole thing was, I see that. When he got drafted, everybody was talking about how he couldn't do one rep of 170. And, you know, now look at him. He's scoring the way he's scoring. He's one of the best players in the NBA. But we got a call online. I'm going to go ahead and take that real quick. You're in the war room, 347. What's your name and where you calling from?
When he got drafted,
hello?
Hello?
What's up, y'all? It's Steve.
Steve, what's up?
What's up, Steve?
What's going on, y'all?
Hey, Steve, this is Dev. I knew I might hear from you on this topic because I know how you feel about the dude, Durant. Go ahead.
you know I had to call in. Well, when I'm in the hood playing ball for like the last 3 or 4 years, I've been telling, you know, everybody on LeBron, rightfully so. So before LeBron even entered the NBA, I said he has the potential to be the greatest player ever. And I was able to make that bold statement just because I did my homework on the kid. You see him, you look at him, he's not out there to look good. His hair is nappy. I don't even think he brushes his hair. All this kid does
ever
is play basketball. That's all he does.
Right.
So you take 6'10" with a handle. I saw some YouTube that from Barry Farms. I think he scored like 70 points. He was pulling up from behind half court. Like before he crossed half court, he's pulling up. So that's 6'10" with a jumper. And then you go into college. The year he was there, he broke the record for most double-doubles. Blake Griffin came and broke it the year after that. So that means he rebounds. Getting assists are going to come because, you know, he's going to get double-teamed and he's a team player. So that's going to be natural. Exactly. Right. So he's 21. Like, think about that. Look, what were we doing when we were 21? This kid is 21 and he's been in the league 3 years, and he averaged almost 31 points this year against grown men.
I was hitting.
Everybody know the NBA nobody plays defense. So it's going to get ugly. It's going to get ugly.
That could possibly go up maybe 35 points a game if he really put his, you know, he really got a
lot of points. How easy he scores in the Olympics?
It's
just amazing how easy he scores just in general. He has a real smooth, fluid game. It doesn't look like he doesn't force anything. It comes naturally to him. He plays within the game. Like, he doesn't force things. I mean, everybody forces things at times, but his overall game, he really plays within the game, and he lets it come to him, and that's what I like about his game.
All of those buckets, PJ, to your point, I'd say 85% of them were within the flow of the game. It was all.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And he's unselfish.
Yeah.
Right. So
Steve, you think he? Well, how would you compare him and LeBron? Who would you say is better right now if you had to compare the two?
LeBron's definitely better right now, but only because LeBron is a freak of nature. But
he's a tight end that can handle the rock like point guard.
Exactly. Like I was telling my man the other day, I was like, LeBron can't come down and just pull four threes confidently knowing he's going to make each one. Like, he will, but nobody thinks he's going to make them. Like, you're like, oh, LeBron shooting a three. He might make it. But KD comes down, and you don't want him to shoot if you don't like him because you know it's good. So it's like if I'm opposing LeBron, I want him to shoot that three. But then Kevin Durant, once he gets he don't even need that much weight. 20 more pounds of muscle, and it's going to be over. Because he has every shot in the game. He has the handle for whoever's going to be guarding him. So LeBron is LeBron. Like, all of that LeBron is soft, and he's weak, and he's about to kill this year. I feel like he's going to murder. Like, I would never speak. I'm not a LeBron fan. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. He has a chip on his shoulder, and he's the most gifted athlete maybe in the history of sports. Like,
plus being
crazy
on the team with Wade now, he can kill and don't have to take the last shot. But Steve, thanks for your call, man.
Definitely.
We're going to move on. So thanks for your call, man.
Good show, fellas.
All right, thanks,
cool.
Man.
Thanks, Steve.
Yeah, by the way, back when Durant was in 10th grade, you know, when Akil was coaching in D.C., and I was one of his assistants. We played against him when he was with National Christian. That's before he transferred to, I think, Montrose Christian. They had a star-studded team, so it's not like he really, really, really stood out. But if you watched his game, you know, with an analytical eye, you knew that the kid was going to be something special. He was just skinny as hell, but, I mean, he still is, and it doesn't matter.
But, yeah, exactly.
I was going to say, and on that team, their starting point guard wound up starting at St. Joseph's, Abdullah Jallo, and he wound up going to James Madison, and now he's overseas. Their two guard was Jesse Sapp, who played at Georgetown, now he's overseas. Their three man was Deron Washington, who played at Virginia Tech, was a second-round pick, and he's overseas. Then you had Durant, who was playing like the 3-4 shooting jumpers. They had a kid named Chris Matthews that played at St. Bonaventure. And then they had Michael Beasley, who was in the eighth grade. And the year before, they had Patrick Ewing Jr., who went on to Georgetown. So he kind of just blended in with a star-studded team. It didn't even stand out that much. But he was, you know, 6'7", could shoot it, got some dunks, you know. So that is my little spiel about it.
Before Jimmy moves it on, I'm going to just, you know, after Kill said all that, I'm just going to leave it there. I'm not going to tell y'all how much they beat us by. So go ahead, Jim. Go ahead and move on.
No, I just want to say, since you did sit there and kiss this boy behind for the last 15 minutes, we should move on. But I want to say one last thing about FIBA. I'm now leading the Luis Scola fan club. If anybody wants to join, let me know. But let's move on to what we really want to talk about. Let's talk about some football, considering this is this past week is the first week of NFL football. Let's talk about some football. I have some questions I want to throw around to you guys. I want to know, like, about the Lions game. We talked about it a little bit earlier with the Lions rod. Another thing I want to talk about is the 49ers. The 49ers got cracked by the Seahawks. Like, are you serious? I'm going to get all you guys to weigh in also on Arian Foster. Get dude. But, I'm going to pass it around. First of all, I'm going to see Dev. What's your opinion on the whole Lions game where they robbed? All
right. I've been kind of keeping quiet about this because it's been mentioned a couple of times. I'm going to keep this brief. It was a great catch, but in the end, I kind of think the right call was made. You know what I'm saying? He caught it. He got his 2 feet down or whatever, but the rule is you got to follow all the way through. The ball hit the ground, and he lost it. Everybody's saying, you know, he was, you know, it was jubilation. He got up and celebrated. I think he got up and played it off because he dropped the ball. So he just tried to keep it moving so nobody would notice. I'm pretty sure I'm in the minority. By the way, before we go to the next opinion, if anybody wants to weigh in on that, the number is 323-410-0012. But, yeah, I pretty much think at the end of the play where, you know, he's supposed to secure the ball, I think he let it go. And I think his run to the back of the end zone was basically him just playing it off.
Okay, I mean, well, that's sort of like what that goes along amongst the lines of what Jeter did last night, but that's a whole other story. What's your opinion on the Lions game?
This week or last week?
Well,
coming up this week or last week in terms of the Lions?
The catch that wasn't a catch.
The one they've been talking about.
I mean, to me, it's funny because when I saw it, I was like, damn, he caught it. But then when you look at it again, like, kind of like Dev's point. I mean, it's an interesting read, though, because it looks like, we've seen receivers catch it, you know, have one hand and try to show that they have, that they caught it while they're either falling or as soon as they hit the ground, they're trying to show that they have it. And it happened so quick. It looked like he caught it, had control, but when his hand hit the ground, he was like, I wasn't sure if he was getting up to celebrate or if John really fell. And it looks like, I haven't watched it about like 15 times because yesterday I just kept rewinding it. And it almost looked like he was losing control when it hit and he got up to celebrate to play it off. Like I said, like it almost, you know, it's the whole like a flop. Like it was, he may have known that or just to play it off, try to get up and celebrate. But I thought he had it. I will say that. Like, when I saw it, the first time I saw it, even the first, like, three times I thought he had it. And then I heard the rule, and then I looked at the catch again, and I'm like, damn, maybe he didn't. So it's an interesting rule. They said they're going to, like, you know, readdress it in the offseason. But
anybody else got anything to say about that before we go to the next topic?
Let me briefly get my Brett B. Austin. What you got to say about it?
I don't waste too much time on the little topics.
Well, he didn't make two football moves.
Basically.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's a couple ways. Here, I'm going to give you my quick opinion before we move on. I think that the rule needs to be looked at, considering if he made that catch at the one-yard line, once he crosses the plane, that's the end of the play, and whether it gets knocked out of his hand or not, it doesn't matter. But the fact of the matter is he caught it in the back of the end zone, and because of where he caught it, that changes whether it's a touchdown or not. Running backs are allowed to jump and just touch the corner. I mean, that's it. So, you know, but at the end of the day, I believe that he should have held on and showed that he had possession. The mistake he made was trying to get up and celebrate. I think he caught it. But I think that in him trying to get up and celebrate, it came out of his hand. And I think that's part of, you know, him growing as a receiver. In that situation, you have to show that you have control, because it's about more than you celebrating your touchdown catch. That's just my personal opinion.
What's up with the 49ers? What y'all think went on in that locker room after they got smashed like that?
They all got whippings. From Singletary. He made them bend over. I don't know. Because, like, it's funny. We talked about this last week, and a lot of us thought that, you know, the 49ers were going to be the dominant team out there in the NFC West. But, I mean, again, the NFL season is a marathon. It's not a sprint. This is one game. It's the start of the season. A lot of times these games are sloppier. You know, a lot of teams and players don't get into their groove to a little bit farther into the season. But I don't know, man. I don't know what happened to them. I didn't think the Seahawks had that in them. So,
we'll
see. Interesting to see the 49ers, because they play the Saints this week. So we'll see how they bounce back. But last week was nasty.
I'm gonna go two points about that game. Alex Smith.
Thank you.
Doug, what you think?
Look, I don't know. I think it's a sprint situation. I mean, a marathon situation here. I don't see Seattle being that good in the long run, but if they can pull it off and keep winning games like this, then, you know, Pete Carroll, he might get some attention. But,
Real quick, I just want to say my opinion. I think that Pete Carroll has brought the same system that he had in USC, and he's found a way to get his players extra money when they shouldn't get it, and that's why they're playing so hard. I think that's my thing with the Seahawks. Like I said, this is a long season, but I think Pete Carroll found a way to get his players some extra money. He brought that same system that he had in USC, and that's why they were playing so hard. My next question, everybody, is Arian Foster, like the fantasy stud of the week, Paul. He killed the Colts, and I want to know this guy come from.
Hey, look, I got to give Naranis props, because on the air last week, you know, when B. Austin asked him what running game did they have, you know, he named a couple backs, and he put Arian Foster's name up in there, and the dude just went off last week. And, you know,
he's listening to our show. I said Arian Foster was listening to our show, and he felt like he had a chip on his
shoulder. Yeah, he was a little upset. Like, what do you mean, what running game? Yo, that's a passing team. They only passed for 98 yards. Like, Schaub got to take a day off because this dude, Arian Foster, whoever he is, decided that he wanted to make his debut into the league.
Tim Hightower.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly, and it's funny because we talked about that game, how, you know, how important it was for the Texans, and, you know, being such a divisional rival that the Colts are to them. And it's almost like they're like a mini Super Bowl just to get that monkey off their back. I mean, granted, like we just talked about, it's still a long season, but that's a big win for them. So I wonder if they can take that momentum, you know, and how far they can take that momentum with them. But Arian Foster is an interesting type of back, because he's like a bigger, like a bruising type of back kind of, but he has like some pop to speed in, you know what I'm saying? So it's like, who is this dude? Who created him? Like, I mean, you know.
I want to know. I want to know why his parents named him Aryan. Like, you're an African-American man named Aryan. That's neither here nor there.
You know we always trying to be different.
Aryan, though? Aryan? Seriously, Aryan? Anyway, it's about
the we keep the momentum going a little bit.
Let's talk about some different topics. Because I want to get into, you know, more football because the Cowboys and Skins played this week, the Ravens, Jets played, and, you know, we had a question in our Facebook page, which a lot of people chimed in on, and I want to talk about this, too. You guys saw the Ravens-Jets game, and you saw how Ray Lewis was running around just causing havoc, and he had a great game. And I want to know, is Ray Lewis more impressive at 35 than Brett Favre at 40 for what they do? And
that's a good question.
I'm stuck on the fence with it a little bit. When we posted the question, you know, when I replied a little bit, I think I was leaning a little towards Ray Lewis. Now, somebody pointed out to me, well, 35 is not that old, but I had to point out, you know, to that, I was about to say caller, I had to point out to that Facebook contributor that Ray Lewis probably takes a hit every single play of a game. Now, Brett Favre, you know, he got his fair share of hits last year, but this dude basically slams himself into 200- and 300-pound dudes on every play of the game. So I would probably lean a little over to Ray Lewis' side, but what Brett Favre is doing at his age, you know, that can't be discounted at all.
Well,
yeah, you're right, Dad.
Caught a body
go ahead,
day,
go ahead.
PJ, you weigh in. Let me hear what you got to say about this situation. Who you think
I was going to piggyback off with
you.
In terms of, like, Ray Lewis, at that position, at that dog linebacker position, he's in a car accident, like, every play. I mean, granted, to be 40 and do anything athletically, whether it's and do it at a high level, whether it's throw a pitch, you know, score 35 points in a basketball game or, you know, be an NFL quarterback, a Pro Bowl NFL quarterback, then to do that at 40 is really impressive. But what Ray Lewis is doing, like we talk about how, you know, the average lifespan of a running back is like 3 years. Well, I'm thinking on the other end of that, like a linebacker, I don't actually know the number, but it can't be much longer than that. And
right.
Because, you know, it's just the other side of the collision a lot of times. But to do what Ray Lewis does and to still be doing it at 35, at the level he's doing it, I might have to go with Ray Lewis because my man be in, like, straight collisions, and he brings it, and he brings it all the time. So, you know, and plus they're putting skirts and pantyhose and stilettos on quarterbacks now, so you can barely really touch them. So,
Ray Lewis,
yeah. You want to say something about this?
Ray Lewis, my uncle, so I'm going with Ray.
Plus,
I'll go with Ray Lewis too. Even though what Favre is doing is impressive, like Dev and PJ and Brad alluded to, I mean, to take that founding pause, play after play, you know, hitting big old linemen and running backs and chasing, running from sideline to sideline at 35, I think is more impressive than what Favre is doing.
All right, well,
Jimmy,
let me just
what do you think about Brett Favre?
All right, now here, let me weigh in real quick, and some people will not like what I'm getting ready to say, but again, like I said on Pass the Rock, I have my own opinion. I believe that Brett Favre is the most overrated athlete in all of sports. I think Brett Favre is no better than Aaron Brooks. I believe that if Brett Favre was African American, he wouldn't even be in the league. Brett Favre is allowed to throw interceptions at crucial times in games every season. He throws just as many picks as touchdowns, although last season he did have a, you know, 30-7. But so what? When the game was on the line, with a chance for him to go to the championship, what did he do? He threw a pick. His last pass as a Packer was an interception. He's a bum. The one Super Bowl that they won because the special teams were playing out of their mind, and the kick, it was a Desmond Howard won the MVP of the game. He was trying his best to lose the game. He's a bum. Reggie White was killing people in the Super Bowl. If not for that, he would never have that Super Bowl win. The very next year, he came and got smacked around in a ball when the team needed him. What did he do? Throw interceptions.
That was just a give back.
Absolutely. My last comment is, if Brett Favre was African American, his name would be Aaron Brooks. They call him a gunslinger because he tries to fit in when he know he shouldn't. Guess what? Some quarterbacks do that. They're out of the league. So that's just my opinion. So with that being said, I think Ray Lewis is much more impressive because I believe that Brett Favre is the most overrated athlete in the history of sports. And what
refers to his team every offseason, he should be embarrassed. He should be embarrassed.
Right. But again, look, you got me cracking up because you have been, had that position on Brett Favre for a long time, because every time you go on your rant on Brett Favre, has
the thing about it is this. People are sports that are making. Listen,
I know that's going to get a lot of people mad. So what we're going to do here, we're going to actually mix the thing. We're about to get into some more football topics, the Eagles, if anybody want to call in. But at the same time, we're going to take our sound off question, because I'm pretty sure somebody might want to call in and talk to Jimmy about Brett Favre. So that number is 323-410-0012. So, Jimmy, get us into that Eagle talk, because you knew
it had to come. Speaking of quarterbacks and being overrated quarterbacks, after this past Eagles game, I was getting text messages on Facebook about how great Michael Vick is, as if we forgot how horrible Michael Vick was. Michael Vick is what he is. I'm not going to say he's a complete bum, but he is what he is. You know what you're going to get with Michael Vick. So if that's the case, if you know what you're going to get with Michael Vick, why play him? You're not going to win a championship with Michael Vick. That's the bottom line. So if that's the case, give Bob a chance.
I'm going to take this call real quick.
Okay.
I'm going to take this call.
Sorry.
All right, you're in the war room. What's your name and where you calling from? 267-679?
Monica calling from Philly.
Hey, Monica, what's up?
What's up, Monica?
Yo, I totally agree with this Brett Favre comment. This dude is a dirty bum. I swear to God, when you look at his touchdown to interception ratio, if you look at it like if Brett Favre was paying bills, for every bill he paid, it was one he didn't pay. If that was us, our credit score would be jacked up. But yet, this dude is like glamorizes the best things for sliced bread. He's going to die on the field for him to retire. So I need like a defense to like kill him this season, so I don't have to hear this crap in the off season this year.
Dang.
I'm going to make a challenge.
Well, Monica, thank you for your call. And we will get back in.
You're welcome.
All right. If I see Brett Favre, we tell him you're looking for him.
You tell him how you mad, sis.
I know.
Just to go back to what we were saying, people are scared to have that opinion because when you watch SportsCenter, they make you believe that he's the greatest quarterback ever. Just like Michael Vick should play. Why should Michael Vick play? Tell me that. Why? They're not going to win a championship. Is your goal to win a championship?
You got it? This is my thing on Michael Vick. Real quick. Like you said, people seem to have forgotten that Michael Vick, you know, he earned a $100 million contract with the same stat line that got Joey Harrington damn near run out of the league. And if you think I'm lying, go check the numbers. They basically are the same dude. And everybody's going to say, well, they won, this and that. When Atlanta's defense stopped being good, Atlanta stopped being good. So, you know, everybody's calling, oh, we should put Vic in. Look, Vic got into a game where the opposition didn't prepare for Vic. Now, if you get ample time to prepare for him and, you know, you get your ends holding their lanes, you get somebody spying, and they force him to pass because that's what defenses want to do, and how do you justify clamoring for a quarterback where the opposition, the whole strategy is to force them to pass? Does that make any sense? That doesn't make any sense. So like I said earlier in my rant, they need to just be calm, be patient. Give Kevin Cobb a chance. If he turns out to be a bum, he turns out to be a bum. But everybody's excited, and the Eagles aren't really any good this year anyway. They're young.
They're going to be good anyway.
Everybody's
good,
field positions are 27 and under. You know, I'm a diehard, but I'm real. I'm objective. I'm not sitting here screaming, the Eagles are going to go to the Super Bowl. We don't have a shot at the Super Bowl. So let your young quarterback learn with his young receivers and his young running back and his garbage offensive line and just chill.
I want to weigh in on this topic, gentlemen, because I think what it boils down to is an opportunity to educate the casual football watcher and fan. When you look at Mike Vick and what he brings to the table, certainly a tremendous athlete. That's a good thing. That's certainly a good thing. But it's almost like if you want Vic to start, why did you get rid of McNabb in the first place? What you're going to get is somebody who can extend plays. They can extend plays. The rush isn't going to be as effective because he's able to get out of trouble. But the NFL is about preparation by coaching staffs, scheme, and your ability to play the game at an intellectual level. What
that
translates to when you're facing Michael Vick is you don't bring the rush as hard. You set the edge. You wait for him to react, and then you close the trap on him, or you make him pass the ball. Because we know from a statistic standpoint and what our own eyes have shown us, he's not an accurate passer. So if you force him to pass, you stack the box eight deep, you bring a safety up, you bring in your nickel package, but your nickel is actually for the sake of watching and spying on him, you're going to force him to make bad decisions. I don't know that he's ever really learned the game all that well, so him reading defenses and understanding the coverages that he's facing is still a challenge for him, just as it is for his brethren McNabb. So, you know, going to Cobb, you know, you got to give him a chance. Quick stat, Troy Aikman, it pains me to say this because he's a Cowboy, but I guess I would consider him a very good, if not great, quarterback. He was 1-15 his first season. Back in the NFL
Manning.
Right now, I would have to say is Peyton Manning, and he threw more picks than touchdowns his first season.
Yo, he threw a couple picks that I caught on the couch.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They gave it to the grid.
PJ, I'm going to let you weigh on this real quick, but I'm going to give a quote from the dude Chris Berman, who I really don't care for that much. His act has gotten a little old. But what he said to Keyshawn and Chris Carter when they were going all in on Cobb and Mike Vick should start, he told them, fellas, you don't shelve everything you've been planning for because of one bad half of football. Now,
right.
I agree with that wholeheartedly. That's what I want to tell my fellow Eagles fans. I just want to tell y'all to shut up. Go ahead,
PJ.
I'm gonna let you weigh in on that.
Yeah, I'm not doing anything but reiterating the points that y'all already made, man. It's just a situation where Mike Vick is exciting. He's the video game. He's very fast. He's a you know, athletic human being. But at the same time, like Brad said, the reason that, you know, quarterback is probably the hardest position to play in the NFL. You have to study. You have to study. You have to learn defenses. You have to understand what type of schemes that are being, you know, that are coming at you that have been set up to either blitz you or take you out of your game. Because he is that, I don't even believe Michael Vick studied defenses too much because he always knew that figured that he could get out of trouble with his feet. Like Brad said, the late Jim Johnson used to shut Michael Vick down because he forced everybody to stay in their lanes, maintain your containment, especially the defensive ends, because he likes to run around on the outside. But stay in your lane, maintain, don't bite, don't slant in, go down, like make an L as you rush, you know what I'm saying? But just stay in your lanes and you can shut them down. So the point is, just like Dev said, we don't know what Cobb can do yet. I mean, everybody wants to see Michael Vick play because he's exciting, but you know he's a turnover machine as well. So let's, you know, Michael Vick will probably play this week. He may even play next week in Jacksonville. But let's get a season of Cobb in. Let the man get acclimated to the offense and playing. And you know, we invested $12 million into this guy. Let's see what he can do before we put Michael Vick in there to, you know, to lead his offense. Like Brad said, because it's Kevin McNabb who's going to do that. No matter if it's Avery, McNabb, Vick, or Cobb starts, we're not going to the Super Bowl this year. So it doesn't make a difference. So.
Right. So my question to everybody is, you know, so when these defenses get a chance to prepare for Mike Vick, and he comes out looking like the Mike Vick that y'all didn't think that, you know, was that good when he played against us in the championship game, so what then? Everybody's going to start calling for Kafka?
Yep.
Like, really? and for all of the people,
call us. We definitely want to hear your thoughts. 323-410-0012. Raise your hand. We got to hear what your opinions are out there in the war room, man.
But listen, for all of the people who text me while the game was going on talking about do you miss McNabb yet and this and that. Let me give you McNabb's stat line in the game on Sunday that he didn't really do much. McNabb was 15 for 32. That's 46% completion rate for 171 yards. No touchdowns, no interceptions. Now, Cobb, in like three series, was 5 for 10, 50% completion rate. He only had 24 yards passing. He had zero touchdowns and zero interceptions. He led his team 3 points. McNabb led his team to 6 points. Now, I'm not, like I said, I'm not one to judge things off of one game. So I'm not saying McNabb is not going to do a little better than that with the Redskins. But if y'all going to be texting me every time somebody does something wrong on the Eagles, y'all might just want to wait a little while to see what your boy is going to do before you start calling me, because that's not much. And they basically had the same game. They both had an interception that was taken back. So what did he really do besides some lucky plays by the defense? You know, the Redskins really wouldn't have won that game if they had to rely on Donovan McNabb to win that game.
McNabb is trash truck juice. I said it. McNabb is trash truck juice. All the McNabb lovers, he's trash truck juice. You can have him. He's a bum.
Hey, yo, check McNabb this out real quick, too. Saying, Dad, hold up. Cobb started 3 games in his career. McNabb started like 10 years. And he still did the same thing last year. So why are they fucking you saying, you know, do you miss McNabb? If McNabb ain't doing too much more than what Cobb is doing, and McNabb is a seasoned vet, and Cobb hasn't even gotten through half of an NFL season, that's
no,
bad.
McNabb had to, he had the same game as Cobb, just stretched out over 4 quarters.
I'm not.
The Redskins game, and I was happy. I was like, oh, they still got the same McNabb. Go ahead, Redskins. Y'all got it.
I
got
to hurry up. There we go.
Let me make one quick point. McNabb is trash truck juice. And for all the people that wonder why the Eagles got a new stadium, it's because McNabb threw so many ground balls, he tore the turf up at the vet. He is a bum. B-U-M. He's a bum. You could put him in a can with Favre, who's also a bum. These guys are bums. You know what? Just stop watching highlights and watch the game, and you realize these guys aren't leaders. They're bums. I'm done.
All right. Brad, make the last point before we wrap this up.
I'm not really qualified to speak on McNabb because I can't offer an unbiased opinion. I hate the dude with a passion. It's personal with me. I'm trying to see him. I'm going to make this quick. If you notice, I'm going to speak to all the Washington Redskins fans out there. You guys won the game with him on the sideline. And if you want to continue to have any chance at winning, you will find a way to keep him on the sideline.
All right, Kill, real quick before I wrap it up.
Yeah, all I was going to say, in my transition, and I was listening to the game, watching the game, and then as I was listening to it, I couldn't help but hear, true story, McNabb drops back to pass, throws right, into the ground. McNabb drops back to pass, throws right, into the ground. And I'm like, yes, okay, another incompletion. All I could think of was the bounce passes that he threw at times in Philadelphia. And good win, Redskins fans. So I'm done.
All right, look. We'd like to thank everybody for tuning into the show. We enjoyed having you all in the war room this evening. We'd also like to thank our college sports contributor, Victor Montgomery, for his appearance tonight and that great discussion on college football. Please join us next week, same time, same place, and we'll discuss the results from week 2 of the NFL season and look ahead to week 3. We'll talk a little fantasy football and Philly sports with fantasy/Philly sports contributor Nyrann Mercier. And we'll also keep him around for the debut of our best ever segment, where the topic will be greatest basketball player of all time. We'll discuss our opinions as well as get the opinions from you, the listeners. Some of the opinions on this panel will surprise you, so be sure to tune in next week for a very controversial discussion. And as usual, we'll discuss all the biggest stories in the week. Until next week, everybody, we will holla.
Bars is a bomb.